Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, February 26. Greetings again as we come your way with a look at another fascinating week in the market world on Wall Street and a lot of data coming out in the world of agriculture with the USDA Annual Ag Outlook Forum in Washington, D.C. Max Armstrong will discuss that with our market guest later on in the broadcast. And I'll be talking with Sarah Wyant of Washington, D.C., the president of AgriPulse, which is the largest agricultural reporting news service in our capital. And we'll be talking a little bit about who would be a good president for agriculture. So that coming up, and we welcome your company. And as we start the week, it was an interesting week for the housing industry on Wall Street because we started the week with a report on the existing home sales. Existing home sales, that was reported on Tuesday, existing home sales for January reached a six-month high, and that came as a surprise from the National Association of Realtors. As they said, existing home sales increased 0.4% to an annual rate of 5,470,000 units, which is the highest level since July, and last month's sales pace, the second highest since 2007. But then the next day, the housing industry came out with another report, the sales of new homes, and that was reported sharply lower. As a matter of fact, single-family home sales doubled in January from a 10-month high. Sales in the western region particularly down, but the overall housing market recovery, they think, is still intact. The Commerce Department said single-family home sales dropped 9.2% last month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 494,000 units. And economists had forecast new home sales to rise instead of the decline that we saw. So talk about two different reports from the housing industry. We got them this week on Monday and Tuesday. Later in the week, some other reports that came out and had an impact on Wall Street. We ended the week today with consumer spending going up solidly in January, and underlying inflation picked up by the most in 4 years, according to the Federal Reserve. That keeps the possibility of interest rate increases on the table for this year, and the growth outlook was further bolstered by steady consumer sentiment in February, despite the recent stock market sell-off. And that perhaps would ease fears of a looming recession. The Commerce Department said consumer spending increased 0.5%. That's the largest gain in 10 months as households ramped up purchases of a range of goods and a return to normal winter temperatures helped demand for heating. Consumer spending, and we've talked often about that accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, rose by 0.1% in December, and then moved higher again now. So all in all, some pretty good reports. And then yesterday, a strong durable goods orders report showing that the U.S. manufactured goods in January rose by the most in 10 months as demand picked up broadly, and that offered a ray of hope for the downtrodden manufacturing sector. So manufacturing, which accounts for 12% of the U.S. economy, still constrained by a strong dollar, weak global demand, and capital cuts by oil field service firms like Schlumberger and Halliburton following the sharp decline in oil prices. So let's look at oil prices. What happened today? The oil prices fell Prices turning negative soon after the release of U.S. oil rig data by industry firm Baker Hughes that showed a 10th weekly decline in the rig count. And so for the day, Brent crude settled down 19 cents to end the week, $35.10 a barrel. U.S. crude settled down 29 cents to end the week at $32.78 a barrel. And we continued to see the stocks of crude oil moving higher. But maybe the low price of gasoline is causing more driving because gasoline stocks fell for the first time since November. But the increase of crude inventories up 3.5 million barrels compared with expectations of 3.4 million barrels. And crude stocks at the Cushing, Oklahoma delivery hub rose by 333,000 barrels. And so oil still having a tremendous impact on equity markets around the world. We did get some positive news from China, too. At the G20 meeting, Chinese officials said they would not cut their currency rate anymore. They would find other ways to find solutions for the problem they're facing on the economic front in the world's second largest economy. So that's, let me do one more thing. Let me salute friends of ours at ADM, Archer Daniels Midland. For the second year in a row, ADM has been ranked the world's most admired company in the food production industry by Fortune magazine and considered the definitive report card on corporate reputation, Fortune's annual list of the world's most admired companies, ranks companies in a number of major industries, including the food industry. Well, coming up, Max Armstrong will talk about some of the numbers in that World Ag Outlook Forum in Washington, D.C. that ended today. And I'm going to be talking to Sarah Wyant to see what she is seeing in Washington on who farmers and ranchers like in the presidential election. All of that coming up when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Brian Split joining us this weekend from Allendale Incorporated, headquartered in McHenry, Illinois. A big download of data this week. You folks were looking forward to that, seeing the information from the Ag Outlook Forum in Washington. Were there any big surprises as far as you folks at Allendale were concerned?
Well, I think the trade in general has been mainly focused on the early numbers that we would see what the USDA is thinking for acreage. And we know ahead of time that they're going to use a trend line yield, so that's not a surprise. But I think the one number that may stick out a little bit would be the soybean acreage. Thought there was, at least for Allendale's numbers, we were expecting that acreage for soybeans would be up 800,000 acres from last year's plantings. And the Outlook Forum has the soybean acres 200,000 less than last year. So that would be one number that may stick out a little bit. We've been seeing some producers talking about planting a little bit more soybeans just because of the lower cost of production there.
Well, let me talk with you a little bit about that. I mean, I've been hearing reports, and I'm talking about outside the main corn and soybean belt of the Midwest here. I've been hearing reports, let's say, from up in the Dakotas about the possibility of more sunflowers going in, more flax, even flax going in up there. I've heard reports from the South that producers might be boosting corn acreage a little bit, boosting cotton a little bit.
I talk to a lot of producers in a lot of different parts of the country, and so you're very right. If you go to other areas where they have the ability to grow some of the smaller grains, they will do that. They may move away from corn and soybeans and go to some of the other small grains, and we are looking for an increase of about 750,000 acres in small grains as a whole. And so in the conversations that I have with producers, there seems to be a few different issues that producers are facing, and so there's some different mindsets. Some producers are indicating they may go a little heavier towards soybeans because it just costs less to produce. So if cash flow is one of the main drivers for your planting decision, then that might lead you to some more soybean acres. Now, I am talking to a lot of producers that will be going heavier towards corn, and I understand that as well. If you look at where the margins lie right now, it does make sense to look at corn and go a little bit heavier there. And also just corn as a product will allow a producer to potentially yield more. So the yield potential on corn will outweigh the extra yield potential on soybeans. So that may give a producer some extra bushels to market and give them a way to possibly yield their way out of the low price scenario that we're in. And by and large, what I do find is that a lot of producers just stick to a rotation, and it doesn't matter year to year what the margins, outlook may look like. It doesn't really matter what their cost of production may look like. They stick to a rotation, and they're going to continue to do that. So we're going to find out a lot more about that. Allendale is going to start their annual planting intention survey next Monday, and it's going to go on for 2 weeks. So, in about 3 weeks, we'll have a much better indication of what we really feel is the reality of the outlook.
And then we're just about a month away from USDA's planting intentions report. I believe that comes out on the 31st of March. That will hold some pivotal information, too. You precede that, of course, with your data, you're saying.
Yes. So every year prior to that March 31st quarterly stock and planting intention report, Allendale will do a survey of their clients. And we will use this survey as the baseline for our acreage estimates moving forward for our new crop outlook. So I think that our data is very well respected in the industry. And I think our research does a tremendous job of being very close to where the USDA usually ends up for the final production numbers come June.
Looking at those acreage numbers this week from the Ag Outlook Forum, was there anything there that suggested the market might need to pull one way or another here, might lean one way or another just based on those figures?
I think the numbers that we got are pretty well in line with where the trade as a whole seems to be placing acres. For the most part, I think there's some people in the industry that I talked to that think we could be a little bit over 90, up in the 90 and a half. I've talked to other individuals that think we
You're talking about corn acres.
Yes, I'm sorry, for corn acres, correct. So 90 and a half million acres of corn seems to be a popular number. I've got some other friends in the industry that think that corn acres could be closer to 89 million. So I don't think that 90 million is a shocker number that's going to get anybody too excited about needing to make this market move one way or the other to adjust for those acres. And the same thing for soybeans. The number was a little bit less than what we thought it might be, but I don't think that number is a major market mover either for soybean acres.
I guess some of this acreage that will be added this year would be coming from acreage that just didn't get planted last year, correct? For example, in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Well, we do have a lot of prevent plant acres from last year that will come back into production. We'll also have some acreage coming out of CRP that we'll have to account for. Allendale is expecting about 1.2 million acres to leave production overall due to low prices. And, we've got an expectation of an increase in cotton acres, and the USDA showed that with an expectation of 800,000 acres of cotton above and beyond last year's seeding. So that's the big picture that we're looking at right now. But, yes, we will have some acres coming back into production from both CRP and from last year's prevent plant.
Shifting gears just a little bit, taking a look at the ethanol industry, we are producing a lot of ethanol. We're using a lot of corn to do that. I think I saw that in the most recent week we used about 103 million bushels. Is that right? About 103 million bushels of corn to produce ethanol, and we're finding a home for it.
That's been, I think, one of the surprises for corn is that we just continue to grind. And, you know, you look at where the margins lie right now, and that in and of itself wouldn't suggest that we would continue to see aggressive grind for ethanol, but yet that continues to surprise. And we are at a time now where the ethanol stocks should seasonally peak, and we'd expect to see those start to draw down. So, yes, the ethanol production this past week was very strong. We're continuing to use corn for ethanol, and if we continue to do this, USDA may need to further adjust the corn for ethanol usage. And that might happen, but at the same time, with the export pace that we're running right now, it would also be reasonable to think that could be offset by a reduction in corn for export demand as well.
Price rallies in grains, they're going to be hard to come by, obviously, with the kind of balance sheet that we have now. But what are you telling your growers about any kind of a rally that can come along?
If we do get a rally, and the market's not going to just go in one direction, there will be price discovery down the road. Unfortunately, right now in front of our face, there isn't a lot of information that's going to make this market move short term. We'll get the next quarterly stock report and the planting intentions at the end of March. But I think the most important thing right now is to continue to keep your pencil sharp and have an idea of where you are profitable. If we do see some volatility to the upside, most likely it may be because of a little bit of a surprise on the quarterly stock report, or if there's some volatility that comes from weather this spring. I think if you are given the opportunity to do some marketing where you can get a positive return on your investment, you need to do that, and you probably need to do that rather aggressively. But there's also a lot of weather forecasts that are calling for some extreme conditions that we could see this summer. And so if that happens, and 2012 wasn't very long ago, so it's still very fresh in our memory how quickly the market can react to a negative weather event. And if that's the case, you want to be able to do some marketing at profitable levels, but also be able to maintain some upside potential on your marketing if we do have a weather event this summer. And so that's the thing that we've been really talking to our clients about, is how can we market at a profit and still have the ability to take advantage of an upside event if something drastic does happen this summer.
Finally, we alluded to this earlier about the good domestic usage of grains from the standpoint of the ethanol industry, but I noticed also in that World Ag Outlook Forum, the summary, the U.S. Ag Outlook Forum earlier this week, that they're looking at record supplies, record production of both pork and poultry. We're going to be using a lot of corn yet for feed, aren't we, domestically?
Yeah, absolutely, and that continues to be a bright spot. I think that over time we are going to be going into an expansion phase for the cattle herd, and this will continue to provide an underlying base of feed demand. And, you know, it may not be on this report or the next, but I think there will be a quarterly stock report at some point in the near future where all of a sudden the stocks are a little bit less than we had thought they were. And that is the one demand category that we just don't have a good way of tracking month to month. We do a fantastic job of tracking export sales on a day-to-day and a week-to-week basis. We do a great job of tracking ethanol production, but there's just not a mechanism that we have that tracks feed usage. And so that's why that feed residual category is such an important number in these reports. And so at some point down the road, I do think that we could get a surprise where quarterly stocks are a little bit less than expected, and I would think that would come from better-than-expected feed usage.
Brian, we thank you for your efforts to sort it all out. We appreciate you joining us in the studio this weekend.
Well, thank you for having me, Max. Really appreciate it.
Brian Splitt from Allendale Incorporated.
One of the speakers at the Phoenix Ag Club meeting a few days ago, Sarah Wyant, who has been covering the world of agriculture for a long time. She is CEO of and editor of the AgriPulse News Service. And I take my hat off to you, because doing ag media in Washington, D.C., it has to be a challenge, isn't it?
Oftentimes it is, but I have to give my hats off to our team out there. We now have the largest group of reporters just focused on ag and rural policy issues in Washington, D.C. And they have great relationships with so many people that are understanding that we focus on providing balanced and trusted coverage. And so they have a very good network of sources, and they do a great job.
You shared with us at this meeting your insight on some of the things going on agriculturally in this campaign. What would you say is the biggest challenge agriculture has with all of the candidates?
It's trying to educate them about what is really going on with modern agriculture. And I have to say that it's a run-up to the Iowa caucuses, when you could almost back into a candidate coming out of a restaurant and going find another one going in, or at the Iowa State Fair when everyone made a run through, with the exception of Donald Trump, who just flew over. There was a lot of interest in engaging agricultural groups. And we saw different farmers and agribusiness leaders endorse respective candidates. And some candidates, like a Carly Fiorina, took time to go ride in the combine. So that opportunity to educate was very, very strong as a run-up to the Iowa caucuses. Now, Orion, as we know how that turned out, and we go into some of these other states, it's going to be a little bit more different to have an ag focus. But Iowa and Ohio can still play key roles in the final presidential race. So I think candidates will pivot back to some farm and rural issues as we go into the general.
Do they take agriculture and the agricultural vote seriously? Because what, we're 2% now?
That's right. Under the most liberal of definitions, that agriculture and farmers and ranchers are less than 2% of the population. But as you know, everybody eats. There's a strong interest in food. There's a strong interest in national security. And we've seen in other instances around the world, when countries can't feed themselves, they really don't have the security of any kind of border, of any kind of governmental security. So the linkages between food production and national security and our ability to have our defense be strong, I think, are very, very, very evident. Perhaps not the top issue, but when we surveyed farmers and ranchers, 750 different respondents at the end of January, the number one issue they saw as an important thing for this upcoming presidential election was national security. So to the extent that you can link food production to national security, I think it's very important.
And you mentioned in your presentation here that the Senate vote could be interesting in the election as well. We haven't talked much about that.
It's kind of been overshadowed, but when you're watching what's happening on Capitol Hill every day, you see the messaging votes coming up right now, trying to position the House, which is controlled by the Republicans currently, and the Senate, which is controlled by the Republicans, positioning them so people have a chance to understand how a Republican Party might govern in Congress. But the Senate has 34 seats up for re-election or election this November, and so many of those are already in play because they're states where President Obama swept the vote previously. So as you go around, you look that currently the majority in the Senate is so slim, it'll only take 4 seats to flip in order for the Democrats to regain control. So as you watch what's happening in the Senate especially, and what is not going to happen, like I do not think that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will be voted on until after the election, in part because Majority Leader Mitch McConnell does not want to put some of his Senate candidates who might be already in jeopardy up for a tough vote.
And that is an important thing for President Obama, isn't it? He would like to see that in place before he leaves.
It's one of his legacies,
yes.
Expanding trade to the Pacific Rim and beyond, 12-nation pact, tremendous opportunity for U.S. agriculture, and one of the few areas where President Obama and Republicans can find common ground.
And final question, Sarah. I don't want to know who you're going to vote for, but have you made up your mind yet?
I have not.
Thank you, Sarah. I think a lot of people are in your situation, still not deciding who they're going to vote for in the presidential election. There's more to come. Stay with us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Today at the Ag Outlook meeting in Washington, D.C., they made their projections on crop production this year with the acreage numbers that they put forth yesterday. But today, the Department of Agriculture predicted the U.S. corn crop would come in at 13,825,000,000 bushels. That would be up from the 13,600,000,000 last year. They also projected the ending stocks for corn in the United States at 1,977,000,000 bushels, and that would be up slightly from a year ago. Soybean production, the crop, they said, would come in at 3,810,000,000 bushels, and that would be down slightly from a year ago. They projected soybean ending stocks at 440 million bushels, and that would be down 10 million from a year ago. The wheat crop projection, a crop of 1,991,000 bushels, that would be down from the 2,052,000,000 a year ago. And wheat ending stocks put at 989 million bushels, and that's up slightly from the 966 million a year ago. Also, USDA in its Outlook Forum projected the amount of corn used for ethanol at 5,225,000,000 bushels, feed and residual at 6,600,000,000, and exports of corn at 1,700,000,000 bushels. So those are the numbers that the markets have been dealing with for the past couple of days. So let's take a look at where we're going to start the trade next Monday. As we check the grain market ending prices today, we find March wheat at the Board of Trade at $4.43 a bushel, dropping 2 cents today. So that's where they'll start on Monday. The corn market Monday will start with a March contract at $3.54 a bushel after dropping just half a cent today. And the March soybean contract will start Monday at $8.55 a bushel after dropping 3.25 cents a bushel today. Incidentally, soybean meal, it levels took us back about 6 years this week. The livestock futures trade, cattle, not a bad week, as a matter of fact, but let's look at the hog market for today. It gained 32 cents for the June hog contract. That means it'll start Monday at $80.97, while the nearby April lean hog contract will start at $71.10 after dropping 2 cents. Cattle, April, starting Monday at 137.22 a hundredweight, and the April cattle market dropped just 12 cents today. The April feeder cattle contract will start Monday at $158.75 after dropping the 32 cents, make that a 52 cent decline in today's market. Soybean meal took a big hit this week. We don't talk about that a great deal, but it certainly took a hit in the market, hitting multi-year lows in the trade this week. Looking ahead, we have the Commodity Classic getting underway on March 3rd down in New Orleans. Max Armstrong will be there to cover that event of wheat, corn, sorghum, soybean producers. That'll be in New Orleans. It's a 3-day event. Another reminder, National Agriculture Day in Washington, D.C. That will be March 15th. You're invited. We'll be there. Have a good week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, thanking you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.